is Wednesday, our 10-county listening area in central Iowa. This is Membership Week, a week where we focus on getting feedback as well as contributions from our listeners. So, our guest for today is a listener, Stu Huntington. Hi, Stu. Glad you could be with us today.
Good morning, Susan. Good afternoon, I guess, as of 1 minute. It's nice to be here.
Well, I'm especially glad to have you here because you're not only a listener, but your lifetime field of study was exactly about what our listening area is about. Could you fill in a little about who you are?
Yes, I was interested in the programs you did on small towns because that's an interest area of mine, and we have lots of small towns in Iowa. Some doing maybe a bit better than others, and it's fun to think about how they're achieving that success, and you've certainly covered that in some of your programming.
Yes, that's the goal of Local Talk Wednesday, because when we started out, we thought the projected extent of our listening area would be just a little beyond Story County, and we keep finding more and more about how far the signal goes.
Sure.
And most recently, I had a real insight into the way I think we ought to look at our listening area, because it's a geographic area.
Mm-hmm.
And it is distinct because of the size of towns that are here.
Right.
And so if it laps over to Perry, which is the show mm-hmm. that you
yes.
talked to me
yes.
about,
yes.
That's fine. And the people in the rest of our listening area will enjoy Perry.
Sure.
And it was about a festival. You were interested in going after hearing
the
show.
Well, yeah, we had it on our calendar. Unfortunately, there weren't many other things that kind of crowded it out. But 1 year I would like to get there. And we've been there, you know, numerous times for bike riding and other purposes. It's just a delight what they've been able to accomplish.
And the ideas that we try to promote. This is a feel-good show. Yes, we know that there are problems in the towns that we cover.
Right.
You know, water problems. Those are big
mm-hmm.
problems.
Right.
But they cover those on other days.
Right.
On Wednesday,
right.
We talk about how much we can learn and enjoy in our listening area.
Right. Good approach.
This is Membership Week, and so we are inviting our listeners to think about just how important this resource is to our area and to support it, because we need to be sustainable just like our nature does. Now, you had some interesting ideas on that, Stu.
Well, I sort of wanted to start out with a warning, because they said you could either contribute, you know, online, which is, a great way to contribute, or you could just, call the phone number, which we'll probably be repeating at some point.
515-292-2878.
Thank you. Or you could stop by the office. And unfortunately, I chose to stop by the office, which I do not recommend, because that's when people started collaring me and got a hold of Susan, and then she more or less dragged me by the collar and put a microphone in front of me. But actually, I'm glad to be here. There's programs that I really especially like, and I divided it out, and I think it probably costs about $17 an hour to keep the station on the air. So I thought, well, you know, people could choose to support the station for half a day for $204, or maybe even have a whole day dedicated just to them for $408. And you could think of, pick a day on the calendar, and that would be your day to keep the station on the air. I know that it's a shoestring operation, very efficient operation, but without some sort of minimum income, it's just not going to be around forever, and I would, for one, would really miss it.
Well, that's a terrific idea. And I'm thinking about you give a birthday present to somebody. This is your day, your birthday,
yeah.
And the whole day of KHOI is dedicated to you. We'll have to figure out how we can do that.
Yeah. Then we'd only need 365 people with each distinct birthday.
Well, but we do – if we had 500 people right. or families, they could be our 500 families, and we could stay on the air – with 500 people contributing $250 a year or a mere $21 a
right.
month.
Right. And maybe some people can just afford, you know, an hour or a few hours, and that would be great. I know you had asked me some of the programs that I was particularly fond of, and I kind of think of myself as a bit of a news junkie, but first thing in the morning, boy, when I turn on the radio and hear that Song of the Soul, you know, I'm not really ready for hard news early in the morning, especially some of the news we've been getting in the last few days. And, you know, to listen to something like that where there's, you know, really music and discussion and it's kind of a folk genre, that is just a pure delight. And, you know, there's other things during the day. Now, you mentioned you wanted feedback, and I have a little bitty complaint, which has to do with community calendar, because when that rolls around, you know, they're running through some very interesting things going on in our community, in our region. And by the time I hunt up a pencil and grab a little scrap of paper, the thing has gone by and I've missed it and missed the, you know, the time and the phone number to call for follow-up. So that was my one little tiny suggestion, was that if they could somehow maybe devote a little more time to that and go through those things, maybe repeat the number a couple of times, that kind of thing, that would maybe help others in addition to me who are a little slow on the uptake. Other things that I've liked, you know, local talk. So much of what we get on the radio is, you know, has a national, international, or statewide bent, and that's all great. But to have a station that really focuses on our local area, I just think that's very valuable.
Well, thank you. And I had a insight into the difference between the true local stations, you know, the stations that are the city stations, mm-hmm. and us. Because when I was in Perry, a woman was very interested in KHOI, and she even said, "Well, can't you move to Dallas County?" And so I later talked to her about that, and she said, "Well, we have a radio station, but you're a regional station. You reach beyond Dallas County. You reach, as I've been saying, 10 counties. By the way, in case you don't believe that, I think I can say them all.
Oh, good.
There's Story and Boone and Hardin and Hamilton and Polk. We just say North Polk because we want to stay out of Des Moines area, although I understand you can hear us from the airport.
Ah.
So we've got as far as Polk and Marshall. And Greene County, where Jefferson is, and the ones that I just added, we used to say Seven County, are Dallas, because we have a real signal that goes into the corner of Dallas, but there aren't any towns there, or I'm not quite sure. Perry is definitely not there, and Jasper.
Okay.
Jasper
right.
County.
Yeah.
And up in the far northeast. And oh, no, it's the northwest. It's Webster County.
Oh, okay.
Cuz we do
sure.
reach the south edge of Fort Dodge.
Yeah. So that raises the issue of if someone's driving along in their car and they're approaching the margin of the area and there's some particularly compelling program that they're wanting to hear the end of, they're just going to have to pull off on the top of a hill somewhere and listen to the end of their show. And I suppose that maybe has happened on occasion.
Well, there's another way that you can hear our shows when you're not in our physical listening area, and it's really an interesting one that I'm becoming quite aware of, and I'll tell you why. And that's the internet.
Okay.
Because we have a fantastic option for internet listening if you have a computer or a smartphone.
Uh-huh.
And the smartphone I discovered when I was living on a boat in Wisconsin this summer, and I thought, but I can't listen to my friends on the radio. I can't listen to KHOI. And I found out I could literally lie in my bunk, and with my headphones, I could listen and not even disturb Fritz on the other side and get everything. But even better is the option that we have our programs, all of our programs, archived for about 2 weeks. So if you miss a program, say I wake up late and I can't, and I've missed local talk, I can listen to it at 8 or 8:30. And same way with any news program. This is an incredible resource. It was hard for me to believe that you could really do this.
So now how would I do that? I would go on the website.
Yes.
And what would I do after that?
Well, there's a black speaker that says, listen here now.
All right.
And that's certainly true. You can listen to in real time. You can listen to whatever is going on. But then you have the option to go back, and it gives you the program and the time. And it's just a schedule.
Well, I'm going to try that because we go away for a month or two in the winter, and I will miss it. And now I know how to hear it when I'm gone. And I suppose I could even send a check from California when I'm out of town. Maybe the U.S. mail would get it here and pay for my few hours of listening time.
Well, that's a terrific idea, and or you could also donate on our website too.
Ah, absolutely. While I'm there finding the speaker, I can find that button. I suppose there's a button that says donate now
or some words to that effect. Donate is what it says.
Okay, donate. Well, that's clear enough.
Okay. Well, now I'd like to go back to some of the community things, because that's something that I really feel very well. I have to tell you how I got hooked on the small towns of our listening area. Before we went on the air, Ursula Rudenberg, our station manager, gave me an assignment to go out to all the towns in Story County. That was what we thought our listening area would be, and interview the mayors, get 10-minute interviews with the mayors. Well, about half the towns didn't respond at all. They didn't answer my phone calls or emails. But the ones that did were so interesting and different. Each town had something special about it.
Right.
And they were so enthusiastic. And these are all towns that had something that they were proud of.
Right.
But it wasn't the same thing. It was the next town was proud of, except the great community spirit. They often talked about that. Mm-hmm. But it was really, and I thought, hey, this is a story we ought to be telling.
Right. Yeah, and I think communities, whether consciously or unconsciously, kind of pick a theme. Of course, communities, the way that Iowa was the settlement pattern, many of these places were farm-to-market towns. They were there to provide the goods and services that farmers needed. And we all know the story of farm consolidation, and there are just not as many people out of there. That's an old story that's been going on for decades. And so these towns have had to change and adapt and find kind of their niche. Find things that would keep people coming to town. Many of them have a stock of historic buildings that they can draw on and kind of, see if those places can be renovated or put to some other use. I think you've done features on, for example, over in Nevada, the theater there that is now staging a variety of comedians and other events. And you know, so some of these things are assets that they have that they can repurpose and put to good use.
Yes, these are very interesting stories. There, I have a couple I'd like to feature during the hour. One that I think you visited also is RVP 1875 in Jefferson, mm-hmm. Robbie Peterson. That's a terrific story.
Yes, it is.
As well as a story about renovating an old building.
Right.
And
I think it's an example of people who have maybe lived in their community. Maybe like my children wanted to get out of the area, explore other parts of the world, and then they wind up thinking, well, maybe hometown wasn't so bad after all, and they wind up coming back to their roots and, you know, establishing a business, as in that case, and making a life very close to where they actually were originally from.
Yes, and there's something that's quite an interesting phenomenon that I think is missed when people talk about the trends. And I will quote Dave Swenson, who's an economist who studies small towns. And in a recent film on lost schools, which, of course, is, these are for many communities real tragedies because the school is the anchor.
Right.
And so when they lose their schools, you know, the towns are mostly boarded up. And he said, well, some towns grow, but he said it's a zero-sum game. They move from the smaller towns to the bigger towns. But that's not true because a lot of the people come back or are new. When I was in Perry, the people I covered most were the people who had renovated the old post office, La Poste.
Oh, yes.
And the one that I particularly interviewed had never been there. She had actually been in the corporate world, and she decided she wanted something else, and she opened a paint store in Perry, which was extremely convenient when she had to restore the – I'm trying to remember whether it was 10 11-foot windows or 11, 10.
Oh, no, yeah.
These huge windows in this post office, which since it was on the National Historic Register, they had to be really restored.
Right.
And she was she did that and because she loved living there. And
right.
She said, why do I volunteer? Because I want this to be the best space there is.
Right. And sometimes it takes an outsider to see some of those things and see the potential. Maybe those of us that live in these places and walk by them every day, drive by them, maybe we don't see the potential or don't have quite the vision that an outsider's eye may provide.
Well, I'd like to, before I play this little clip that I have with Robbie Peterson, tell his story. Now,
sure.
I guess he came from Jefferson.
Right.
But the way he started his business was that he learned to make historic furniture at the Living History Farms. And so he went to Story City and rented a space and had a business there.
Right.
Where Paul Wearson met him. And Paul Wearson is my usual co-host for this program.
Oh, yeah.
And so Story City gets a little more than its quite equitable share of the news. And but he was very anybody who's gone to Story City at the time that Robbie was there would have noticed his shop.
Sure.
It was pretty impressive. And he was also in theater and, you know, the local at the Story City Opera House. And then he moved to Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turned out he needed a bigger space. And it just happened that his hometown had a very large brick lumberyard. Now, who wants a lumber – I unfortunately do not remember the size of this, but any lumberyard is pretty good size. And this one was big enough to have, I think, 5,000 feet for his shop and a very large space for his residence. He could have his apprentices living there and in the back a very large space for the History Boy Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a solution for the city's, you know, this probably building that would soon have been derelict. It was just what he needed in space, and he had what it took to make it a big success.
And he's really stayed true to his what he sees as his mission, using the tools of the period. If groups or especially groups of school children come, he dresses in period costume, as does his staff, and they just, you know, really provide a time travel in that sense.
Could we have the clip from RVP 1875? Robbie Peterson's RVP 1875 is a very special experience for anyone, but especially for any woodworker. As soon as we walked through the door of the shop, we entered a different world. There was Robbie wearing a black wide-brimmed hat like an Amish farmer, a striped shirt. I didn't ask him if it was hand-woven. Probably was the kind of calico that came west with the first shipments of goods. Knee breeches, suspenders, and black boots.
And these were boots that Grant would envy. I really thought they were great. I think everything Robbie wears is period piece. But, you know, the clothes were just a small part of our RVP 1875. And let's hear Robbie's explanation.
We're in the year 1875 with everything we do. That's the year I do all of my research. And that's the year we use all the tools from, all the techniques from. But being in the year 1875 Iowa, we get to build two generations of furniture. See, some people are just getting here in that covered wagon. They're those pioneers I've been talking about. But some people have been here 40 years already. And they're ready for the 8-foot wardrobe and the 10-foot tables. Full time. They didn't need to save space. They just needed good furniture. So we call that second generation furniture.
The large workshops and showrooms were filled with the bewildering variety of furniture pieces, but he took us first to see a simple piece he called a chimney cupboard.
For 2 feet of floor, you see, story, you got 7.5 feet of storage, but only giving up 2 feet of floor. And in that little, you know, the average pioneer, they'd move here in their covered wagon, they built a 10 by 14 log cabin. And so big wardrobes and hutches and pie safes and all those pieces were not even an option. They took up too much floor. And so tall and skinny was the way to maximize that floor space. So this would be the only cupboard in a typical pioneer cabin, chimney cupboard. We know that there were 10,000 of these made in Iowa alone, and yet I've never seen one in antique form. That's what gets crazy is what happened to 10,000 chimney cupboards. And so we specialize in bringing those pieces back then and reintroducing to the world to what was a very important popular piece 100 years ago.
Why is it called a chimney?
Because they're tall and skinny like a chimney. That's how they get their name. Yeah, they have nothing to do with placing it by the chimney or anything like that. But you see, with it being tall and skinny, it's just chimney shape.
So,
wow, very interesting.
And that was the beginning of our tour.
Yeah,
and incidentally, that's something that Paul Wearson, that Paul, of course, was the one who made the remark about the Grant boots.
Actually,
those first trips that I went out when I interviewed the mayors. I wanted to bring Paul because I thought I couldn't interview. I thought I had to have somebody with with live radio experience. Well, the trouble with live radio experience that goes back to the 70s is the 60s is that he didn't know the modern technology. You know, he could do a lot of things with turntables, but he didn't understand these tascams, and he wasn't real eager to learn. So I said, okay, well, if you'll just do the interviews, I'll come along with you.
Sure.
And so we had so much fun on those trips. We called them road trips.
Well,
we're going to take a road trip now to Slater to interview the mayor, and so. Then when we started doing programming together, we said, well, let's keep up those road trips.
Yeah, good. I think it's very interesting to hear about these places. And, you know, it makes me want to get in the car and go visit.
Well, that's part of our idea. It's like, here's a travelogue. This is a nice nearby vacation or a nice day trip.
Right. And maybe it's time to talk about money again.
Oh, yes.
Should we say something along that line?
Well, you're the
fundraising week.
It's the
now. I thought I would maybe highlight one other program that I really like of many. I always look forward to Fridays because when I turn on the radio in the morning, there's Tom Beal talking about the movies. And, boy, he doesn't just play music from the movies. He knows who the director was, who the actor that almost got the part was, and all the background that's relevant, what the budget was, how much over budget they went. Just fascinating. I'm just amazed at the amount of information that he has, and it's extremely entertaining and informative. And like many of the programs on KHOI, or as I like to say, Kahoy, and it's just it's just a delight. You can go right up and down the list. There's music in the evenings, or Roger Berger is a friend of mine, so I love turning the radio on and hearing a familiar voice. And, boy, it just makes me want to support the station and make sure that it's still around in the years to come.
Well, yes, I think that the only way that you can make sure that it's going to be here in the future is to support it now.
Right. And it really got my attention. I was listening earlier in the week, and somebody said there are community stations that aren't around anymore, and that would just be a tragedy. And so that's why I decided I better come by and drop off a check.
And kind of member are you?
Well, I guess I'm one of the 500 families. I'm happy to be in that group. It took me a year or two to get here. I knew about the station in the very, very early stages, and I thought, well, now what is this going? Is this going to be one of those 50,000-watt religious stations, or just exactly is there a church? And what is happening here? And it took me maybe longer than others to realize that it's just. It's community radio, and it has great variety. It has so much to offer. And, again, that extremely local focus, which I just find really intriguing.
Yes, it's a local focus, and it's actually, for me, it's a personal focus. One of the things I love about going out and doing programs in the small towns is meeting the people. And I feel now I have a network of friends here and there. Not very many. Not as many as I'd like, and yeah. I wonder if they ever listen.
I'm sure they do.
But I feel very connected to the people in the towns. And just with one or two visits, they just, they're so proud of where they are. And there's another thing, though, that I have become aware of. Things that I never thought of about the history of our region. One of the reasons for a lot of these towns was that they were on railroads.
Right.
And the railroads are gone.
Mm-hmm.
But those railroad beds have been converted to bike paths.
Right.
And particularly in our listening area, I guess it's true all over Iowa because I know the rails to trails was huge here because we had so many abandoned railroads. But many of the towns are connected via a bike path.
Mm-hmm.
And, for example, Perry, which used to be a railroad town, really relies for a lot of its regular tourists on the Raccoon River bike trail and coming up from Des Moines.
Yeah.
And I guess you've ridden on that.
We have. In fact, through Friendship Force, which I think there have been people on this station talking about Friendship Force, which is a people-to-people travel organization here in town and throughout the world. We had a group of bikers come in last summer, and we started out in Perry by the caboose there. And there's a very nice parking lot where you can park and unload your bikes. And then we went west, and about the time it was time for lunch, we were in the extremely little town of Jamaica, Iowa, And there's exactly one business there, which is a little grill called Tojo's. And we went there and had Iowa pork tenderloins, which I thought these international and visitors from other states would appreciate something different and something that is kind of has a local reputation. And the whole experience was just delightful. And it's a, as you say, it was a railroad, so the grade is very gentle. It's very fairly flat, and even the most novice biker can handle it. And people just really got in the spirit of it and had a good time. It's interesting scenery. There's shade along the way, and it's just a nice day.
And your lunch in Jamaica reminds me of something else. Again, it's a personal story, but I'll go ahead and tell it.
Sure.
But after we finally got on the air, I still wanted to do road trips with Paul Wearson, but I was getting assignments that he was too busy. He found volunteers in the schools a lot.
Uh-huh.
That's one of the reasons he's not here
today. Sure.
And so I was going to have to go out on my own, and this particular program was the High Trestle Trail and what difference it had made to the economies of the towns along the trail. And so I looked for restaurants, and at this time I asked Fritz to play the role I played and push the buttons on the recorder, and I braved it to do interviews.
Sure.
But what I discovered was there were two or three businesses. One, unfortunately, I can't remember their names. Oh, yes, something.
The Flat Tire, perhaps?
The Flat Tire, definitely.
Yes.
That was really, really fun. Could you describe the Flat Tire?
Well, the Flat Tire, I think it looks to me at least like an old Quonset hut from World War II era that's been turned into a very attractive pub and eatery. Right on the bike path, and you see all sorts of bikes there and their riders inside, and they also have a very attractive deck with some umbrellas and chairs and tables and people just relaxing, having a good time. There's just a number of those that have kind of sprung up to serve the bike, I guess you could say, the biker trade.
But the cyclist trade, isn't there a
exactly.
distinction? And I, in fact, we'll get to that a little bit later in the program. The other restaurants that I visited were real restaurants. I think there was one in Woodward. And
yes.
This man actually he wanted to start a restaurant, but he was driving through Woodward and he saw this old building for sale, and I don't know whether it had been a restaurant before, but it wasn't a successful one at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But he connected with the fact the bike trail was going to be going in. He bought the building and he has a very successful restaurant with a bicycle theme. I was trying to think what it was. It was something like the bike seat or the...
Yes, it's right there on Main Street.
Yes.
And actually, the business right next door to that is very interesting also. I don't know if you wandered over to the hardware store.
Yes, I did.
And Toy Museum.
Yes.
Upstairs. Fascinating.
Yes. But the bike trails are now pumping... They're
right.
bringing business, not as much as the railroads used to bring. You need more serious repair shops for steam engines than you do for bicycle repairs.
Yeah, yeah.
Nevertheless, it's a real way that the local economies are reinventing themselves for the 21st century.
Right, right. And I know when I was calling Tojo's Bar and Grill, and being in the town of Jamaica, they have kind of a Columbia Islands type theme. And I talked to the proprietor, a woman named Tommy, and she said, "Now you be sure to get here a little early because right at noon, the farmers come in and they're hungry and they want to get something to eat and get back to their work." So we tried to accommodate her. And so, you know, they've got several different trades that they do and different groups that they cater to.
Well, that's interesting to me because I hadn't thought about farmers coming into town for lunch. My picture is going home for dinner,
right.
And turning on the radio and listening to the radio during. And they did, of course.
Right, sure. Well, I guess nowadays maybe the wife is now in town working, and so the farmer's on his own, and so he comes to Jamaica for lunch.
And rubs elbows with the bicyclists.
Exactly.
Okay, well, now there's another – this leads to another one of my favorite discoveries. One of the first places, mayors that I talked to, was Mayor de Young in Cambridge. Mm. And he had with him a member of the city council, Mike Mackey. And Mike Mackey is very enthusiastic about his community. And so later, when I went back to do an extended story, I interviewed him about what he called the Ballard Way. That mm-hmm. was his phrase. I mean, it was used by other people first, but he mentioned that. And there's a very outstanding example of the kind of taking a problem, a challenge, and making it into something that is good for the community. And let's play from that clip.
One thing we didn't mention was that we have a ATV or motocross park. Mm-hmm. It's a private park. It's members only, and there aren't many places for people to ride that type of a vehicle around. It's the only one in the state that's wide enough for a side by side, where two people sit side by mm-hmm. side.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the guys who started it and who are providing leadership for it right now really do put a family emphasis on it. You go to some of the parks that allow for riding, you get a lot of hot shots who are out there, and they're competitive riders who need to practice their competitive skills. Not necessarily the case here. You get a ton of families on a nice afternoon or a nice weekend day. You can hear them running. It's not intrusive, but it's good to know that people are coming to Cambridge to take advantage of that opportunity.
I think they've got about 150 members. They have had events. They've had a veterans ride.
But then they also come back. They've got a real keen sense of serving the community. Mm-hmm. They help out with the truck pull during Jubilee days. In fact, they ran it, didn't they?
Yeah, they ran it.
They will come up to the school, and they've been in collaboration with myself and the principal there to do some safe riding courses, some safe riding qualifications, so that, you know, a kid who has an ATV or a family who has an ATV, those children are being taught in state law that they have that course under their belt before they are allowed to ride. So it's not like they exist in the periphery. They're part of our community, and we embrace them and what they're providing.
From what I learned from Scott DeYoung and Michael Mackey, I was eager to meet Anthony Rossing, the president of CORE, Cambridge Off-Road Enterprise. If he ever used the phrase Ballard Way, I'd like to play what he told me, followed by Michael Mackey's response.
The Ballard Way is, you know, like an integrity kind of thing that, you know, you're going to keep your nose to the grindstone, maybe do it a little differently than some people might, but it's still the right way. It's a blue-collar kind of rough and tough, I'm going to get it done kind of way. Being living in this community, they all feel the same way, you know. They're very passionate about the things that they do, even in the community, through the schools, through volunteer services, stuff like that, that we're going to see it through, regardless of any obstacle that we might come across.
But when Anthony mentions that blue collar, that working class background, I think it in part goes back to the fact that this is a rural community. While we have fewer and fewer farmers every year, there's still that working class mentality, that get her done, that gritty, tough, not afraid to get your hands dirty mentality. And I think it trickles down into that caring and compassionate approach to being neighborly. So I think Mr. Rosing nailed it. As you move forward and you continue to promote and explore South Story County, keep us in mind. You know, we've got art teachers who are real active in the community and who are getting kids' artwork out there and getting recognized. We've got music programs and arts programs at the high school and middle school level that have great leadership from adults and then enormous, enormous participation with some incredibly talented young people. Obviously, our athletics garner a lot of attention and sort of speak for themselves. Our 4-H membership is just gigantic. And when you go to the county fair, the kids from Ballard are very, 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 very well represented in each of the areas that, 4-H kids are showing. So there's a lot of great things going on. Are they things that aren't going on in other places? I don't know. Like I said at the beginning, I don't live in other places. I live here. And I'm going to continue to toot Ballard's horn as hard as I can, and anyone who listens will get an earful from me, because I'm very, very proud of this place and proud to be part of it.
Well, yeah. That was I had forgotten that I had recorded that. That's interview with Scott DeYoung was the original interview from the mayors before we went on the air.
Right.
And that example, because incidentally, that RV park had been a huge problem area for the town. It's on Ballard Creek. It floods. And so basically the ATV group took it over, and they keep it
sure.
cleaned out.
Yeah.
They've turned something that was a terrible problem for the town into an asset, and it's very close to the bike trail. So this is kind of funny. So you've got both kinds of vehicles in friendly proximity.
Right. And, you know, Susan, I have another connection with some of these small towns you've been visiting. One of the little jobs that I had after I retired in 2004 was delivering congregate meals to these to various communities, Maxwell, Huxley, and we went to Nevada. And, you know, one or two days a week, Heartland Community Center would cooperate with either a local church or a community center, and we would take meals, and those would be served to senior citizens. So it's, again, it's part of the caring and compassion that you see in many of these small communities. They are heavily populated with seniors, and that's one of the roles that they serve. It actually brings them some economic development, because seniors need a particular mix of services, whether it's legal help or medical assistance and all these kinds of things. And so this is another way that these communities have found a niche and found a way to thrive.
It's interesting. They have both ends of the demographic spectrum. They have children and families who move there for children. I think that when I interviewed the mayor of Roland at the time, he said that 25% of their population was school age. And that's because it's Roland's story. And I think we'll have time for the clip from John Sheehan, the principal of the middle school. Paul Wearson and I, well, Paul, because he's in the Roland Story District, is of the right age, is invited every year to the Christmas dinner for seniors that they put on at the Roland Middle School. And he arranged for me to come along, too. So this is from our visit with John Sheehan.
This is the day of the senior dinner. Tell us about it.
We are excited about this. This is one of our highlights of the year. We started this a number of years ago. I believe this is number 13. And the whole idea behind it was to give back to the people who have been so good to us over time, who have supported the school for literally a lifetime. And if we can do something to make their Christmas a little brighter, we wanted to do it. So every single grade level gets involved. The fifth graders are out there as we speak, greeting our guests, escorting them in, talking to them as they take them to their seats, putting their coats behind their chairs, and just kind of giving them a nice introductory to Roland Story Middle School. The fifth graders also did placemats that every senior will get in front of them that they'll be able to keep and take home with them.
And I have my personalized invitation.
Oh, yes.
Because I am a senior.
Yes. And that invitation was made by the sixth graders, and that's one of their responsibilities. They go out usually right before Thanksgiving, and then we have start fielding the phone calls coming in of all the seniors. We're at right now over 200 that have signed up to come for today, so we're really excited about that number and very happy the weather has worked out. We've had a couple years in a row where it's gotten snowed out, and we've either had to cancel or make up at a later date. So it's nice when it's kind of with a Christmas theme to be able to get it a little bit before Christmas time. So yeah, that's what sixth graders' role is, and they'll also be serving the dinner today. And then our seventh graders have made up a bunch of goodie bags that will be made, and then they'll escort the guests out at the end. Eighth graders are kind of in charge. We, being the big dogs here, we kind of give them a lot of responsibility. So they did up all the party favors. They decorated, set up the gym. They'll tear it down. So then the eighth grade will be in charge of entertainment as well. So after the seniors are done eating, and the eighth graders are kind of the maitre d's, so to speak, and hosts of the day, there will be entertainment. And there's 13 separate little things that we'll do to entertain them. And by somewhere around 1 o'clock, everything will be wrapping up. And then the 8th graders are in charge of cleanup, so they get everything looking like it was before we started. And hopefully you'll be able to describe some of the decorations in the various hallways and especially the entryway by the new gym where the seniors come in.
Well, you know, this is great because everyone's involved. Every child has a role. All the staff are cooperating.
Yep.
The first thing I noticed when I drove up, where the cars are usually parked in front of the school from the staff, they're all parked on side streets so all the seniors can come in and park their cars. And you have valet parking, too, I believe.
Yes. In fact, you know, there are certain staff members that have taken that role to make sure that that's offered. And so they'll greet them out front of the building and get them directed around the back, pull them right up to the doors so they don't have to walk very far, and then they'll park their car for them. So
it's a wonderful thing, and all the kids are involved at so many levels, and the staff, they have to organize this and make sure it all comes off. And what's really going to be impressive about this, it is every year, is the stage show they put on after this dinner. Tremendous. It always really moves me. And last year, John, who has a great voice here, the principal, sang a moving solo that got everybody just excited. And the kids loved it, too. It was wonderful.
Yeah, it's a fun day. And we hope our mission in this whole thing is to give the kids a chance to go into Christmas with the true meaning of what it's about. It's supposed to be about service and helping others. And we've discovered that there's a number of the seniors that come. This is their only Christmas. Family is either gone or far away, and so they go away with hopefully a lot of good memories and a good way going into the Christmas time, and they take a lot of goodies with them that we provide, and we just want to thank them for everything they do.
Okay. Yes. Well, that we were very impressed with that as the spirit, a real spirit of the season, and what the children got out of that, and everybody was involved. It was
really
neat.
Yeah. Well, there's so much out there, and one resource that I thought I might mention just for those people that are listening in small communities is the Iowa Main Street Program. And Ames has been heavily involved in the Main Street program, but it's not just for the bigger places. They have conferences and programs that reach out to the smaller communities as well. And I know you wanted to talk about festivals, and that's one of the things that they emphasize, working through the Iowa Economic Development Department. So if there are people from small towns that are looking for ideas, looking for assistance, the Main Street program might be very helpful to them.
Well, that's certainly true. There's nothing like a festival to show off your main street, as I realized. Of course, Perry is an unusual situation, but the town looks it's at its best, and there's quite a list of them in our area.
I
wrote them down for this. Of course, a lot of people know about Pufferbelly Days in Boone. Mm-hmm. And of course, that the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad is from, well, I guess actually all year round. It's a tourist attraction and something that the local people are volunteer for. Now, that's very, very important in these towns, is they couldn't do these things without volunteers, but it also gives a focus for the volunteer efforts. I mean, they're the volunteer efforts for helping people, right. But this is a fun way to have an event. Now, Puffer Billy Days, Scandinavian Days in Story City, of course, and the Storytelling Festival in Story City. We're always double dipping with Story City with Paul, but Ragtime in Randall, which is obviously in Randall, and that was revived again this year after having a couple of rocky years. Skunk River Valley Days in Cambridge. That was extremely interesting to cover because they had an exhibit for agricultural drones. Hmm. And that's actually very edgy. I don't even quite know what happened with that because parts of it disappeared from the website between the time that I was told about it and the time I put it up. But that was very interesting. And what an amazing thing to have as a matter of fact, in Cambridge, they had the hobby drones race out at the ATV park. And 4th of July in Slater, that's their big reunion day for people coming back from all over. And Prairie Fest in Huxley, which is at the end of the season. And Colo Crossroads, which is near the Nyland Corner, the crossroads of the Jefferson and Lincoln Highways, which is that was another favorite road trip of ours to go to Colo, although we didn't go to the festival. And then Collins Days. Now, Collins is a town of about 300, but they still had a festival. And Kelly, which has lost its post office. So it lost its school years ago. It's just lost all its main anchors. But it has a volunteer fire station. Mm-hmm. And they have a Christmas pancake breakfast with the fire chief, who is also the mayor, flipping pancakes, and Santa Claus, who I shouldn't tell who Santa Claus was there. And he recognized the children.
Yeah. Oh, great.
And if we expand our geographic listening area, we could also include the you just mentioned the State Center Rose Festival.
Yeah, it's a very big deal.
And of course, Art on the Prairie with Perry. Yeah. In another year, we could visit it again. And one that I haven't mentioned that's not on the regular schedule yet is the Chautauqua in Webster City, and it looks like we're running out of time, and so
maybe we should remind people again, this is a special week here at Cahoy, and we're raising funds, and we need their support to keep KHOI going strong.
So we can really serve our 10-county listening area. So if you could join us as members at $55 a year, or premium members at $100, or one of the 500, join us as being among the 500 families,
yes,
at $250 a year or $21 a month.
Right.
And you've been listening to KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people's stories and events in Central Iowa. I've been your host for this special live noon edition of Local Talk, and my guest has been a very special listener, Stu Huntington, who not only spontaneously told us he liked our shows, but spent his professional life in community and regional planning in rural areas. You also heard clips from some of my favorite programs and people, Mike Mackey from Cambridge, John Sheehan from Roland, Anthony Rowling from Cambridge, and Robbie Peterson from Jefferson. And, Scott DeYoung was also on there with Mike Mackey.
Well, thank you, Susan, for all you do.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast. No, it won't be rebroadcast today. It was engineered by Richard Morrison since we're live. And our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, or if you have an idea of a guest that we could have, like Stu, a listener, or a guest, contact us at 515-292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends. And remember, your participation as listener and contributor is what makes KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.